and welcome to Weird and Wayward again. I am Incha Fitzpatrick.
And I am your other host, Geraldine Schaefer.
And today we are going to be talking about female serial killers, aka killer queens.
Yes. Oh, that was bad. Yeah. And like every episode, we are drinking, and this night we're doing the French 75. And you'll be able to find the recipe up on Tumblr.
Oh, you put the recipes on Tumblr?
Well, I did, starting with a cult episode.
That's so fucking cute. Yeah. If you guys don't notice, I don't check the Tumblr. I just edit these shows.
Which is great, because she doesn't notice how late I am at posting
shit. Yeah, I really don't. They're supposed to have an intern that's supposed to be on top of this, and she's not even here today.
No. And the intern is my sister, who was also on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
For the serial killer episode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Aww. So you can see our wonderful, wonderful intern as she shrieks in horror because of things.
Yeah, you know, because she has the same car as serial killer Ted Bundy. Anyways, back on track.
Do you want to start, or should I start? Because you got... Geraldine comes prepared every single week with, like...
That's not true. I did not do that serial killer week.
Yeah, no, we both didn't. Yeah. That was our wing it week.
Yeah, that was and then, wing like, it. And then...
For cults, I was super prepared.
Yeah, I was not.
That's my jam. And then, like, for this one, Geraldine actually picked this episode because
reasons. So, you know, our whole tag is legends and
weird shit. And weird legends other shit.
So, the killer that I have is also an urban legend. Oh, which is pretty cool, in my opinion.
Wait, so she's like...
Yeah,
She's like a real person.
She's a real person, but it turned into lore.
Oh, okay.
So, I thought that would be really interesting to do. So, I'll start?
Yeah.
So, the lady that I'm doing is called... Her nickname was La Quintrala, and she's from Chile.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically Santiago, and her real name is Catalina de los Ríos Lispinger, and she's named La Quintrala because of her flaming red hair, and the Quintral is a Patagonian red flower that's kind of like a mistletoe, and it's like, it's also kind of like what you would call, and this is word for word, a woman of lusty and sacrilegious nature.
So a vagina. You would call her a vagina.
Yeah. So La Quintrala is known for her legendary beauty and, like, cruelty. So she was supposed to be, like, super pretty. And became an icon for colonial oppression, which is also pretty interesting to me because whenever you think colonial oppression, you think of, like, guys, men, and conquistadors. I don't know, like, that's what I think.
I think of Pocahontas.
That too.
Is that, okay, I was like, is that a bad assumption that I think of Pocahontas? Because,
I mean, she was taken and then married off at a young age, mm-hmm, and kind of, like, kept a sideshow.
That's so sad. Depressing. Yeah, keep going.
So, her family's fortune compromised, like, several properties in the capital. So her mansion and estate were in Santiago, and they're actually not too far from where the current state house is in the center of Santiago by, like, La Moneda, which to me was fascinating because my dad lived not too far from there.
Mm-hmm.
And the land beside the church and convent of San Agustin was an estate and, like, a massive countryside. And she had slaves and serfs under her command. And the serfs and slaves at that time were called inquilinos. And today, inquilinos is a term for tenants, but back then, it was a laborer that was indebted to the landlord. And they would work on their farms and properties. And they would usually, like, keep away intruders and stuff. And they would work in exchange, but they wouldn't get paid. So it was, like, they would work to live there, basically.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Yeah. So it was around the 18th century, so, like, the 1700s. And actually, like, this didn't really change until, like, it changed over time. But, like, there was a reform that it became outlawed. And it was as recent as the 1960s and early 70s in some parts of Chile.
Ooh.
Like, her figure really is a big part of popular culture, to the point that there's this Danish composer called Lars Gaard, and he made an opera based on her. And it has five singers going with an interactive computer, and it was done in Copenhagen in 2004. Which, to me,
that's so cool!
An opera? I find that fascinating. And then, like, one of the quotes that I found in one of the sites when I was doing the research was, her life was one of sex, money, murder, sleaze, and religion, intermingled to create one of the most fascinating legends in the city's popular tradition.
She sounds like an investigative discovery.
I know, like, right? Commercial. Like, I feel like I need to be watching Discovery ID.
You're right.
Like, what's the one, The Stranger Besides Me, or...
Oh my god, yes.
I love it.
And it's like, oh my god, Who the Bleep Did I Marry?
Yeah, those shows are so, like, what I like to call craptastic.
Oh my god, South Park calls them murder porn.
Oh, that too.
Which
I mean, they're not wrong.
Like, they're so, like...
Yeah.
They're so good. Anyway, keep going.
So, she was born in 1604, and many of you might not know the background of Chile, but Chile is a very mixed country of European descent. So, her family was both Spanish and German, like Spain, so which is why she was so white and had the red hair, I mean. And she was accused and tried for over 40 men. Murders. In 1622, Catalina's sister accused her of murdering her father with a poison in a serving of chicken. And though this was reported to the authorities, nothing ever happened of it. So, like, they were like, oh, okay, cool.
Like, they were just like, oh, yeah, so my sister killed my dad. And then they were just like, well, we can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Oops.
And then she tried to murder this, like, clergyman who was like, you're being cruel. And she's like, well, if you think I'm being cruel, I'm going to kill you now. And then, because that wasn't bad enough, she then tried to kill Bishop Francisco González de Salcedo when he told the councils of the Indies that Catalina had murdered her stepdaughter by beating her to death. She was also, like, part of the legend and lore of her is that she murdered all her lovers, like, after they would have sex, because, like, she was so convoluted with, like, religion and stuff, so it was almost like she was a black widow, more like a spider, so...
That's like a praying mantis.
Yeah. But spiders also kill after they have sex, like the black widow.
I think so, yeah. That's, wow, okay.
Yeah. So, apparently, her personal hobby was slashing slaves, and it's recorded that it was, like, a recurring thing that, like, her serfs under her care would frequently die, and, like, she had a bunch of fines by the authorities because of that, but, like, nothing ever came for it. She escaped the trial of all 15 documented murders that were filed against her, but, like, she was crazy rich. And her brother-in-law was also, like, a very big judge at the time. Mm-hmm. So, like, they swept everything under the rug. And it was largely because of her fortune and the connections to her fortune. She's one of the biggest, like, sociopaths. And she had, like, a really big self-obsession to the point that, like, when she became older, she kind of disappeared and went into hiding because she didn't want people to see her old. And it's also, like, a Bathory, where she had all these rituals with the people to remain young. So she was also very religious at the same time. So there's a lot of weird things going on at the same time. And she was obsessive. So she had this, like, giant crucifix. And, I mean, it was, like, life-size. And it's called Cristo de Mayo. And following the earthquake of 1647, she had, like, this giant crucifix placed in her own home. But she had, like, a very rocky relationship with the crucifix, according to the website.
This is, like, how and, rocky was
so
it?
So she would wear, like, very, like, provocative clothing for her time. And she would wear these things where, like, it would have a provocative cleavage and that were kind of, like, low-cut and risque.
Okay.
And she felt that Jesus was staring at her, accusing her of being provocative.
She has, like, a giant crucifix in the middle of her house. What did she think Jesus was going to think?
Yeah.
Also, so, I think that's Jesus's job.
Yeah, well, she goes and removes, like, orders the removal of the crucifix, claiming that no man in her house had the right to give her funny looks.
I hate this woman.
So she donated this crucifix to the church that's, like, by her house.
I was gonna say, like, did somebody take it? But yeah, it's a church, okay.
Yeah, no, there's the church that was by her house is mm-hmm. still around to this day, and it's this beautiful church. And
did, like, they take a picture of the crucifix?
Oh yeah, it's still around.
Okay.
It's still around. It's actually up in the church.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Which is the other kind of fun fact that I have about her. And in her death of in 1665, she donated a large portion of her estate to the convent of Cristo de Mayo. And there's a yearly procession on May 13th for the Christ. And her final request was for the Agustinas, who are the nuns,
mm-hmm.
to hold 20,000 annual masses in her memory at the church beside her home. So for 20,000 years, there needs to be a mass to commemorate her.
Hold on, wait a minute. Hold on, time out. It's every 20,000 years?
No.
Every single day for 20,000 years?
No. For 20,000 years, there needs to be one mass that's dedicated to her.
That's bullshit.
Yeah, because it's 20,000 annual masses.
That's bullshit. Because she killed a bunch of people.
Yeah, but they still do it. So every year in this church, there's an annual mass.
Was that, like, her stipulation for giving them, like, Jesus' judgment cross? Just, like, here.
The judgy cross and then, like, a bunch of lands and money.
Okay, the land. Okay. Okay, and then she contributed. And, like, she contributed to church after her many sins of killing people.
Exactly. And, like, if you look at a map, like, where this church is located, it's super, super close to where, like, the Capitol building is. It's, like, it's really close to La Moneda, which is, like, it would be the equivalent of the White House here.
Oh, okay. All right.
So it's, like, in the middle of the city, but, like, Santiago is, like, the the major city in Chile.
That's not, like,
words.
I'm still getting over the fact that, like, they have to, like, praise her for land and money and contributing to a church when she did everything wrong.
I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you. Yeah, I'm not.
No words for that one.
No, there really isn't.
like, this is the basic equivalent of, like, doing everything wrong and then giving your money to the church and going, like, well.
Now you celebrate me every year.
Right? It's just like, I get it.
I actually came super close because there's kind of like a yin and yang in Chilean lore.
Mm-hmm.
So you have La Quintrala, who is the colonial oppression. And then you have La Tirana, who was this Indian kind of like princess who had fallen in love with the Spaniard, and they killed the Spaniard because they were in love.
Hmm.
And she seeks out revenge. And like to this day, there's this religious holiday in the northern part of Chile called La Tirana, and it kind of commemorates her. But she's this like, she was this very vicious and, like, hardcore lady that just went around killing people.
Jesus fucking
That
Christ.
Actually existed, too. Jesus
That's...
So,
That's tough. Jesus.
Yeah. You ever want to go to celebrate cereal killers? I love it.
Okay. So, mine... Her name is, because she's not dead. They tried to give her the death penalty, but it didn't work out. Her name is Kristen Gilbert, a.k.a. Kristen Strickland, which I always thought of, like, King of the Hill when I say Strickland, so that's kind of bad.
Like, doing this podcast and then, like, especially doing research, there's, like, a list of names now that I have that I will never name my future children.
Pretty much. Like, I'm like, Kristen, Ted...
Yeah.
Ted.
There's another one, like, that I was looking at names, I forget in which country, but they were like, it might have been, it definitely was in the United States because Murderpedia has it broken down by states, but there was one that I was like, holy crap, how many of these names?
Also, guys, there is a Murderpedia.com. If you ever want to look up serial killers, they're there.
Yeah.
All in Murderpedia. We are not sponsored by Murderpedia. No. Unless you know Murderpedia, get at us.
You can donate to them, too.
Yeah, donate to...
kind of like Wikipedia.
Don't donate to Murderpedia. Don't take anything I say into literal context. So, Kristen Gilbert, she was called the Angel of Death. And she was a former nurse who was convicted of 4 murders and 2 attempted murders at the VA Medical Center in Northampton, Massachusetts. Which makes me really sad because it's the VA.
Yeah.
She induced cardiac arrest in patients by injecting their intravenous therapy bags with doses of ephenephrine. Yeah, there we go. The untraceable heart stimulant. And she used it a lot.
Oh, that makes me sad. I had this one professor that was a vet, and I'm not exactly sure what war he was in. But he was really, really old, and I would have to give him rides. Well, I didn't have to. But nobody else would offer, even though all those motherfuckers lived in Jersey City.
Oh,
I'm
wait.
Staring at you, class, because you all suck.
Was that the guy? That was the guy that I met, right?
The really old guy?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he looked like he was about to drop dead any second?
Jesus, Geraldine.
Well, he did.
I mean, like, it's not untrue, but fuck. But no, because, like,
he had chest pains in my car at one point.
Geraldine and I went to the same, well, we knew each other since high school, but, well, we didn't go to the same high school.
Yeah.
But we knew each other.
Actually, so... Intro went to Queen of Peace, which was in my town known as the Slutty School. And she's laughing because it's not untrue.
Word and wayward. We say not untrue things.
I mean, we don't want to.
We don't lie. We don't lie.
I mean, it was better than, what was the Catholic school in Rutherford? St. Mary's.
You guys are St. Mary's?
I think so.
Oh. Back to the book.
It was the school that, like, just, there were so many druggies.
It makes sense for some reason.
Yeah.
Miss Rutherford was rough.
I mean,
if you guys don't know too, we live in New Jersey. So don't at us with New Jersey facts because we already know them. Which is weird because we do.
Yeah.
Like, just some New Jersey facts just don't need to be known. We should just do a whole New Jersey episode of, like,
that'd be great.
Fun facts about New Jersey that are creepy and weird.
Jack Nicholson.
Oh, yeah, Jack Nicholson came from here. I'm probably not going to edit half of this out. That's the sad part.
That was, like, my favorite fun fact recently finding out.
Right? like she texted me and was just like, Jack Nicholson came from New Jersey. I'm just like, I know that.
Yeah.
Also, Ezra Miller, Kristen Dunst, most of the gangsters in your favorite films.
I mean, the thing with Jack Nicholson is, like, my aunt lives in Neptune, and that's where he's from.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Nice. Ezra Miller lived in Whack Off.
Whack Off?
First of all, I didn't know there was a town in fucking New Jersey named Whack Off.
Whack Off.
I'm going to call it Whack Off for the rest of my life.
Yeah. It's a silent lie. Also, it's where he dropped the dead bodies.
Ezra Miller, I love you. I'm sorry.
Not enough to call it Whack Off.
It's Whack Off to me. It's Whack Off, New Jersey. And nobody can tell me different. So Kristen Gilbert, I'm not going to edit any of this out. Kristen Gilbert. So she was called the Angel of Death. She was a former nurse who 4 murders and 2 attempted murders, if you guys were listening before. And she's Epinephrine. I swear to God I'm saying that wrong, but whatever. She used it a lot to, like, commit her murders. And she responded to coded murders after resuscitating the patients herself. So, like, she would kill them and then she would be like, oh, no, he's dead.
Wait, is she the one that got off, like, sexually on it?
No.
Okay.
No.
there's this one woman that did that.
Yeah.
Because, like, she was seeing, like, an EMT or something like that. I don't remember her name, but it was on Discovery ID.
This woman, she didn't do anything like that, but, like, it was kind of more of... She wanted to submit herself as, like, the top nurse. Like, okay. I'll tell you about,
I brought them back, bitches.
Yeah, like, I'll tell you about her career. Like, in 1989, she began working at the VAMC, the Veterans Hospital. And she was a well-known nurse practitioner who was actually featured on a VA magazine in 1990. Apparently, 2 nurses who worked with her noticed a large amount of deaths that were going on her watch. Like, it was nobody else's watch, but on her watch. But they didn't say anything about it, and they kept joking with her, like, oh, ha-ha. They gave her the nickname Angel of Death.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they were just like, oh, you're the Angel of Death. I bet they felt like shit afterwards. Probably.
That would be us, though.
Yeah, this is like, I joke with a murderer for, like, 3 years, and it's just like, oh, well, that happened.
Are you a murderer?
No.
Okay.
No. I will tell you straight up now. So in 1996, things really started to go south for her because the nurses started to get, like, really antsy. Like, mind you, this was probably, like, after, like, a while after they called her the Angel of Death and everything like that.
So after it stopped being a joke.
Yeah. And, like, they started getting antsy and concerned with the number of cardiac arrest deaths and the missing amount of, oh, God, the supply of medicine that she used. Yeah. To, like, you know.
Because that, I mean, back then it wasn't as strictly followed, but now it's like really like
yeah on it. Yeah, like especially like after like a string of deaths like happened from like I believe I read from like 1980s to like the 1990s or whatever, like they started keeping like a strict track of their medical supplies because they were just like, what the fuck, guys? Like, are you just using these to use these? And like some of the nurses and doctors and stuff like that would use them to get high. Yeah. But
watch Nurse Jackie.
I forgot that show existed. That's really true though.
I watched it for like a season or two and then I got tired of Showtime because, well, I'm mumbling. Sorry, guys. Showtime, well, the second episode, like, the audio is a little wonky. With me talking at points, I'm like...
Okay.
Yeah. Well, at some points, I'm like, what the fuck am I saying? Anyways, it doesn't really matter. I don't give a shit. Thank you guys for listening.
let me just give you a shout out while I explain to you about Showtime.
But like Showtime for a while, they had awesome shows. They had Dexter and Weeds and I don't remember what other shows. But
they had Shameless for a while.
Oh, they had Shameless too.
But then Shameless just fucking started getting shameless, and then I was just
and
like,
then it was shitty.
Like what? I just want Lip to be happy, guys.
I mean, at some point, no, that's exactly what happened with that's what happens with all Showtime shows, in my opinion.
Like they just don't. Nobody's ever happy by the end of it.
It's not that. It's just that they get so shitty. Californication.
Californication got bad after
like,
a while.
It was really good for the first two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like.
You could tell how like you can like honestly in the episodes too. This is me just talking. Hi, guys. You can tell, like, how much we've been drinking and how off track we get.
But
it coincides so well.
It depends on the drink, too.
Yeah, this is like this has a lot of Prosecco in it.
And gin.
See? Can't even taste the gin. This is dangerous. Every drink that Geraldine makes every week is fucking dangerous.
Well, the one last week...
The one last week was really dangerous. Actually, the one last week was, like, so tasty.
It was very tasty.
It was so tasty.
Yeah, that had rosemary in it, too. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, it had...
It had the blood orange stuff, too.
At thyme and blood orange and lemon. I didn't put all those ingredients in the... I made, like, a simplified ingredient.
She did the spark notes.
I did.
Ingredients. But... So
I mean, you'll get the you'll still get a very tasty drink.
Yeah, no, it's really good. It's really, really good. And like one day, I know we're like talking about this in the middle of the episode, but one day we'll have like John come in and like actually make us a drink too, because yeah. Geraldine makes us the drinks like every week, and then like we have her boyfriend, who's awesome and who lets us use his apartment for these episodes, make us an actual drink. Which is going to be awesome. But yeah. I swear to God, every single time we do an episode, we get, like, so sidetracked. And then you can tell the amount of, like, how much we drink to, like, the sidetrackedness. Because I am not even done with, like, half.
I'm guessing this drink is really hitting you.
Yeah. Well, that's not even me getting sidetracked. It's you getting sidetracked. We're talking about Showtime, for fuck's sake. So in 1996, guys,
it was the pills.
in 1996, everybody's like the nurses started to get antsy with like everything she was doing, and then she actually left the hospital.
Because she was like, "Uh oh."
Yeah, like when the investigation started going on because all the deaths were all on her shift, and then she went into a psychiatric hospital. 7 times while she was away, and she stayed for 1 to 10 days, and that was obviously so while everything was going on.
I'm guessing it was like the that voluntary
Yeah,
because nobody
like told her to go in. She did it herself. And before she left, though, like before, like she went into like the voluntary area and everything like that, she actually called in a bomb threat, and she hoped to shift the investigation from her to other people. And that was in 1998, and she stood trial actually for that threat.
Oh shit!
Yeah, and she called in the bomb threat to kind of retaliate against her coworkers and her former boyfriend, who actually worked in the hospital, because they were helping out with the case. And the hospital staff thought that she may have been responsible for 80 plus deaths and 300 emergencies.
Oh my god!
Yeah. Which, in that's a VA horrifying. Hospital, that's fucking atrocious.
Like,
in a regular hospital, that's yeah. fucking atrocious.
I just, like, picture my old professor and...
Jesus.
Like, it makes me so sad.
Is he still at NJCU, do you know?
I don't know. I haven't seen him, so...
She'll, like, ask somebody, like, secretively.
I mean, I could probably walk up to, like, where his office is and figure out if he's still there.
That's going to be so fucking depressing if he's not.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Never mind. Like, pretend I didn't say that.
I'll go right before I graduate. After my final exam.
Just go and be like, well, this is a fitting end to the college career that once was.
I mean, it would be. We love you, NJCU.
So yeah, there were so she was trying to get the attention of her boyfriend at the time, because apparently, like, obviously after all this shit happened, he broke up with her. And he says that she actually confessed to one of the murders while she was in the psych ward. After, like, she called him on the phone and was just like, ew, I murdered a person. So, and a psychiatrist.
What are you if you don't come back with me?
He didn't, so I hope he's okay. A psychiatrist said that she created emergency situations to bump up her image as a nurse, which makes sense.
Yeah.
And so, like,
in a very sick and twisted way.
Yeah. And there was a lot of incidences that happened with her, and I decided to lay them all out for you. Yay. Okay, so. She apparently had, like, a ton of shit happen with her. And she, like, kind of one little snippet about her past is she was a violent teenager. She actually assaulted somebody with a large knife.
Yeah,
in January, February 1988. She tried to murder a person twice by poison in 1995. She tried to poison...
Wait, and she was a teenager back then?
She was a violent teenager just in general.
Okay.
And then, like, she tried to, you know, assault somebody with a kitchen knife. And this is, like, the start of her incidences.
It was one of those things that I was like, wait, so was she a teenager in, like, 95 and when...
Oh, right.
This,
I was just like...
Yeah, I got a little confused. Sorry.
No, it's fine. And she tried to murder a person twice. Burp. By poison in 1995. She tried to poison a VA hospital patient in 1998. She caused a medical emergency by taking away a patient's breathing tube in 1994. She abandoned a patient while he was going through cardiac arrest in 1995. And then after that, she asked another nurse to come in and check on the patients with her. And after she saw, like, after the nurse saw that there was a problem, that there wasn't a problem, she was kind of like, oh, let me save the day, when there was a problem, you know?
When there was a problem.
Like, yeah. The nurse would check and be like, oh, there's not a problem. And then, like, when the problem would arise, she'd be like,
I know what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I caused it.
Yeah, she swang like Superman into that bitch. 1995.
I bet she'd be a song.
She swang like Superman. Yeah. Somebody make it. In 1995, she made a nurse who wasn't trained at all use defibrillators on a patient because she refused to use it. She verbally and physically threatened a patient with their life in 1996. And before she was even a registered nurse, so before, like, you know, all the VA stuff, she worked as a home care worker or a home care nurse where she scolded a mentally handicapped child with hot water for 8 years.
God.
Yeah. And
that's so awful. Like, my cousin got scalded when he was a toddler.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's so painful, like, the recovery from that.
No, it's horrific.
I mean, it's not funny, but my grandmother beat the shit out of my aunt. Because, like, I mean, it was an accident. It wasn't...
No, yeah.
My aunt was preparing my cousin's bath, and my cousin was running around, and she tripped over with the kettle, and, like, it poured on my cousin's back.
Oh.
Like,
even, like, burn injuries themselves from, like, hot water, it, like, it stings. Like, even when I was little, like, I had, like... There was, like, this one part on my arm that, like, my, like, I had, like, I don't know who it was. I think it was my aunt or something like that. She, like, hit me with, like, hot water for, like, it was a mistake, but she hit me with hot water for, like, some reason, like, because she wasn't paying attention. And, like, I screamed. And, like, there's this, like, one part on my arm that's just, like, it's still, like, a really weird birthmark. And my parents always called it a birthmark. But I'm like, no, that's when I was burnt. Like, let's not get this twisted.
Yeah, no, my grandma was so angry with my aunt that time. Like, she literally, like, backhanded.
See, that's kind of rough.
Well, she did burn my cousin. But
no, yeah, like, the lesson here, kids, don't burn people.
Well, it's that, and, you know, for children, don't fucking run in front of people with hot water.
Yo, fucking for real. Like, I don't understand, like, why. Okay, I work in a library, and, like, sometimes when, like, the kids actually face plant into the carpet, I'm always like, seriously? Did you not think that was going to happen, adult? Maybe you should watch your child.
Yeah.
Maybe they won't get carpet burned if, you know, they, like, face plant into the dirt. But that's cool. Adults. They're such dicks. Anyway, I work in a library, guys. I'm sorry. Anyway, but in 2001, she was convicted of 3 counts of first-degree murder, and 1 count of second-degree murder, and 2 counts of attempted murder. Because apparently they didn't catch, like...
A bunch of them.
The other 70-something murders, or 70-something attempts of murders, or in 300 emergencies that she was dealt, like, that she maybe would have done, or maybe did.
Might have, might not have.
Yeah.
Who knows? Who cares?
And they were trying to give her the death penalty, but they couldn't get it, so they sentenced her to life imprisonment where she is right now.
Oh, she is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's still on life.
Yeah, I mean...
And, like, she tried to appeal it. I think they tried to appeal it, but at the same time,
what's crazy with life in prison is that a lot of times, like, even if they... I mean, you can appeal it, but then there's other circumstances where you can be let out.
Yeah.
Later on in life.
Yeah. Like, I know, like, if we do, like... We'll probably do, like, another serial killer, just, like, circle back around, like, sooner or later. But, like, I know there's a lot of serial killers who got life imprisonment, and then they were let go.
And then they went and killed again.
They went back into prison on sheer life imprisonment, and they were just like, we're not going to make this mistake, like, 3 or 4 more times.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to stay in here, and we're locking away the key.
Yeah. And then there's the other end of the spectrum where you have, like, the three-strike rule.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, 3 offenses and then you're locked away for life.
Which probably, like, the worst thing ever because, like...
For most circumstances, but then, like, I have been listening to this other podcast called Crime Town, and it's about, like, the gangsters in Providence, Rhode Island, but, like, that's where, like, The Godfather... Yeah, it's the next door neighbor's dog.
I just want the dog to stop. Okay.
Okay.
Keep going.
It's where the Godfather kind of comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And that, maybe not, I don't know. Gangster movies. I obviously don't watch them.
It makes me want to watch Gangs in New York.
I did watch that one. But it wasn't that one.
Wasn't that game? It wasn't that one.
Yeah. It's like, say hello to my little friend.
That's literally Scarface.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's like based on this one guy from Providence, Rhode Island, actually. But this guy.
Oh my god, this dog.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. And then when the dog, then like when you start talking, the dog will start
barking and going apeshit. I don't think you'll be able to hear it on the recording.
Oh, no. It'll probably be, like, low-key, but at the same exact time, I'm just, like, this fucking dog.
Well, now he's going apeshit. I wonder if they just got home.
Probably.
Because he's usually pretty fucking quiet.
Did they, like, take, like, a fucking, like, 2-year trip?
No, remember the couple that was coming down? I've actually never seen John's next door neighbor's face.
Is that them?
All right, so my next ladies, because it's actually a group of sisters, and the two main sisters are called Delfina and Maria de Jesus Gonzalez, a.k.a. the Borgianchis, and I'm not sure how to pronounce that. So it was like a group of sisters from the Mexican state of Oaxaca, and it's 200 miles north of Mexico City's, and it was from the mid 1950s to like the mid 1960s, and they ran a ranch called El Angel, which was also known as the Bordello from Hell in San Francisco del Rincón. And I, like, love that it's just, nicknamed the Bordello from Hell. So, like, if you really think about it, it's like, if you're going to a bordello that's from hell, you know it's not going to be a good time. Or at least like not the, for the girls like that are the working
fucking,
there.
That's like the fucking, like, the hell pass. Yeah. It's just kind of like,
Dead Mountain.
Where the fuck would I go there? Who put that on my fucking passport for me to go there?
Yeah. Well, same thing with the people, like, the Johns that would go to this bordello. Like, I can't talk about the girls because, like, the girls were really, like, they were tricked to working there.
Okay.
And they were, like, it's kind of like human trafficking what happened to the girls.
Okay.
But the guys that went there, it's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? So, in the early years, the Gonzalez sisters, and it was four sisters, they were born into poverty in El Salto de Juan Catalán. And this was in Jalisco, and their father, Isidro Torres, was an abusive person and very authoritative, and expected their children to follow, like, a very rigid set of rules, which is also very ironic because what ended up happening to, like, their kids. He was also part of, like, this grassroots police force, so it wasn't, like, a legit police force. So they would go out and patrol the remote areas of Mexico on horsebacks. And it wasn't unheard of for him to, like, get kind of violent on the people during arguments and stuff. And he actually, like, shot a person during an argument. Yeah. And he would lock his children up in the jail as a punishment for wearing, like, sexy clothes or makeup. And before long, Torres actually acquired a lot of enemies in El Salto, which was in the area that they lived in. So they had to move close to Mexico City in San Francisco del Rincón, which is, like, about 100 miles north of Mexico City. And this is where the girls really started kind of, like, making themselves business and well known.
Okay.
So when they like settled down in San Francisco del Rincón, they were like the girls were so afraid of being poor because they grew up so poor that they moved out of their house and they were like, fuck this, like we'll do whatever we have to do to make a better life for ourselves. So they opened up a saloon in San Pancho and they had this bar, and it didn't bring a lot of money, but it gave them enough to like kind of get by. So they're like, all right, we have an idea. We'll bring prostitution and that'll bring us more money. And it did. So, you know. And then they started offering like local law enforcement sexual favors in exchange for like reducing the policing in their establishment. And they would start recruiting local girls into prostitution. And they would like kind of, they would bring the girls in and not tell them exactly what they were bringing them in for.
Okay, so just like sex trafficking, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it wasn't, like, hardcore sex trafficking, but it was.
Is there a low-key sex trafficking?
Well, it started out a little bit more low-key, and then
it was kind of like deception.
It was deception, and then it got, like, really bad.
Okay.
Like, really, really bad. So we're not there yet. But at this point, they would be like, yeah, come work for us, and they're like, so, if you do this, you'll end up earning more money. So, okay. It is sex trafficking, but it was... At this point, they still kind of had a choice. Like, well, not into sex trafficking, but into, like...
It doesn't sound like they had a choice.
No. God, that sounds awful.
It kind of sounds like... It sounds like it sounds like a modern day like SVU episode, yeah. Where it's kind of just like, hey, well, it kind of like, you know what? It sounds like there's this documentary called like, well, there's this documentary series called like Hot Girls Wanted, and it's about like,
I've seen that.
It's like, it's kind of like how like you get into the porn industry, where it's kind of like you make your own money from doing this one thing on camera, and then you walk away with a bunch of money.
Yeah.
But at the same exact time, that reputation still scars you.
Yeah.
But you walk away with a lot of money. So it kind of sounds like that.
It was kind of like, well.
But it sounds like also like the kind of like pimp sex worker mentality.
Yeah.
Where like you have you, like.
They would bring girls that were really pretty into their.
Do they like wine and dine them too, and like treat them nice, and then be like, you know what, you can make like a lot of money if you do this one thing for me.
Originally.
Okay.
Yeah. So after that, they started getting into this mindset that they would get rich by any means necessary, and then like there's four sisters, Carmen, Delfina, and Maria. And Maria was known as Chuy, and she operated a whorehouse in Guajanto and Jalisco. Maria Luisa, who was known as the Leggy One, ran like a bar and brothel near the Mexican border and the U.S. And the sisters also brought in this guy in Lagos, in Jalisco, and he was known as Buanchi, and he was a gay guy. So, which is, like, where they got their nickname, and they hated it. Like, they really resented that nickname.
I would, too.
But it was, like, picked up after the gay guy, which I find kind of funny that, like, that nickname kind of follows them throughout, like, their whole career in sex trafficking.
It's also, like, kind of, like, Italian names. Like, how, like... They give, like, nicknames to Italian, like Italian, like, mob bosses, like, Mucci and stuff like that.
If you look at all, Latin American history, like, Latin America is a big mixture of Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
So, it comes from that.
Yeah.
And even their cartels and sex trafficking, all of that stuff, it does have a big influence with the old cartels, which that's not what they're called originally. I don't know what you call mob bosses, honestly. So what they would do is they would prowl the countryside in Mexico, and like they would basically bring in the prettiest young girls and tell them that they would be like maids or waitresses, or like get poor young peasant girls and like tell them that, yeah, you can work in this big city and like make a better life for yourselves. And in honesty, like they would get them to come into the city and then they would like put them into sex trafficking. And they had this one guy who was in charge of everything. And like, if the girls didn't want to come with them, they would actually kidnap them. And it was, there was this one guy called, he was the captain of the army. And he was Delfina's, who was one of the sister's lovers. And they actually ended up having a kid later on. And, like, this guy would, like, kidnap girls and bring them into the brothel. And the prettiest girls would be saved for, like, the really wealthy patrons. And, like, they would end up being raped and stuff. It was, like, really awful stuff. And then the girls that that didn't happen to, they would, like, be initiated into, like, this brothel, like, being thrown into ice-cold baths. And then the girls would have to, like, buy their clothes back and all that stuff, like, makeup and back from the sisters. And they would be charged for being kept alive.
What?
Yeah.
It's like, what? It's like, oh, give us like $90 because you're still alive.
Yeah, it's like, give us $90 because we're letting you stay under this roof even though we kidnapped you.
That's
to stay underneath this roof.
No, that's fucked up.
And they would not be allowed to go outside. And there's this guy called Zuniga, and he was called the Black Eagle. And then there was also Delfina's son, Ramon Torres, who was called El Tepo, and he was the muscle. And for years, they made tons of money selling booze and, like, whoring out these girls. And the main killings were of these women, and then they would, like, force abortions on them if they got pregnant. And, like, the fetuses would be dumped in the backyard of the brothels or, like, buried at the sister's main ranch. And then if a girl got too sick, if she was too malnourished or had, like, she got too sick from STDs or got sick from an abortion, which they would force on them, they would be locked up in a room and starve to death.
Mm-mm.
Or they would have the other girls beat them to death with logs and stuff. So, El Topo, or whatever his name was, the woman's son, he would be in charge of, like, dumping the bodies and burying them, and, like, he would bury them within the property of the sisters. And then the guy, the Black Eagle, was the chauffeur, and he was in charge of handling the bodies, burning them to ashes, and then, like, doing mass graves. And then if there were guys like Johns that had a lot of cash on them or, like, they seemed wealthy, they would kill them and, like, bury their bodies within their property and steal their cash and, like, their cars and stuff. And when, like, they would be questioned what happened to the guy, they were like, oh, he got food poisoning, so he left.
Oh, yeah, the stomach flu.
Yeah.
I'm afraid he went back home to his actual wife.
No. Oh, so it's El Tepo, not El Topo. Topo's like a like a marmot or something like that. Groundhog. I think.
Oh my god.
I haven't been in Chile in like 20 years. Calm down. So in like 1963, Ramon Torres, who was El Tepo, and he was the son of like the oldest sister, I think, was shot to death in one of the brothels. And the police closed down the place. Delfina, who's Tepo's mom, she like flew into a bitch fit, obviously, because like her kid had just been killed.
Yeah.
And she ordered their like muscle, like her gang muscle, to track down the cops who killed her son, and he like went and hunted them down and killed them all.
Oh my god.
So they were no joke. They definitely weren't like nice ladies. Yeah, I have that. They killed all the guys that had money. And say that the food didn't agree with them. Alright, so they got caught in the early weeks of 1964 where this girl named Catalina Ortega went to the judicial police in León, Guanajuato. And she told them, like, the story of what happened. And she was visibly shaken. She was scarred. She was showing signs of abuse and malnourishment. And she told them that the sisters were running kind of like a concentration camp / brothel. And they started having kind of like this whole investigation on them. And she got really lucky because, like, this one police department wasn't on the sisters' payroll.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, if she had gone to, like, a town or two over, they would have been.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that would have been bad news for everybody.
Yeah. So the police got a warrant and, like, picked up this one woman called Josefina Gutierrez, which was, like, the cousin of the sisters. And she would like require girls to bring to the brothel. And she was arrested on suspicions of kidnapping. And during the questionings, she implicated like the two older sisters. And when the police searched the properties, they found the bodies of 11 men, 80 women, and then, like, fetuses, and several fetuses that totaled over 91.
Aww.
And police and reporters found a dozen of emaciated, dirty women at the ranch, and they were, like, locked in this one room, and as the police and reporters explored the ranch, some of the girls would point to certain spots within the grounds, and they were like, that's where the bodies are, and you'll find the bodies over there. And when the police searched those spots, they found at least, like, you know, the sum of 91 bodies. So, in 1964, the Gonzalez sisters were each sentenced to 40 years in prison. Delfina Gonzalez Belanquez, who is the oldest, Boquanchi's sister, went crazy. And she was, like, super paranoid and feared that she would be murdered in jail. And on October 17th of 1968, she was, like, screaming at, like, a maintenance crew at a jail. And they dropped a bucket of cement on her head and it killed her.
Holy shit. What the fuck?
Yeah.
I mean, like... comeuppance, but at the same time, what?
Yeah, and it's kind of ironic in the sense that she was so paranoid that someone was going to kill her that she turns around and, like, in her crazed state, she goes and, like, makes someone kind of kill her because of that. Like, because she's acting crazy.
Yeah, that's kind of fucking mental.
Yeah, and then Maria Luisa Gonzalez Valenzuela. I'm sorry, I've been mispronouncing the last name, the second last name wrong.
We've been working.
Valenzuela. She died alone in her cell, in jail in 1984, and her body wasn't found until a day later, and it had been, like, rats had gone into the cell and started eating her body.
Oh, fucking what?
Yeah, so at least, like, I feel like the two older ones kind of got what they had coming to them in a sick way, but...
I mean, I'm not gonna argue, like, I can't argue with you there, but, like, at the same time,
Yeah, no, I mean, it's disgusting, but, María de Jesús González Valenzuela was the youngest of the Bonquachis, and she was the only one to be freed, and, nobody, for some reason, they didn't release when or why she was freed, but it said that she met, like, a 64-year-old man in prison. And once they were both outside, they got married and lived in obscurity until dying of old age in the 90s.
Wait, so she got out of prison.
Married a guy.
He was already out. And
well,
then
married another guy that also was in prison at one point.
Okay, so both of them got out of prison and then they just decided to marry each other?
Yeah.
I mean, you know what?
And
do you?
Apparently no one killed anybody else, but at this point too, like, you killed 101 people, like,
yeah,
should you really be out?
Yeah.
And then in 2002, workers clearing the land that the sisters' properties were originally on, they found another 20 skeletons in a pit. And the police said that the victims were probably buried between the 50s and 60s. So it would be most likely that they were victims of the four sisters. So if this is true, their murder numbers would race past the 110 people mark.
Fucking hell. That's, yikes.
Yeah.
Like, I can't say anything else but yikes. Jesus, that's...
Yeah. You pick them. So, I found, like, a bunch of... I gave Insha a list of three people because I was like, so I have my first person. I'm not sure who to do between the next one. And I was like, you have these three people. Which one should I do?
And I picked the sisters. I picked the duo. Because I was like, oh.
It's a duo.
Duo. They can't be that bad. Oh. No, they're terrible.
They were actually the worst out of people. The one from Chatham were only two people.
Hold on.
As awful as that sounds, like, the one from Chatham, I always think of, like, I wonder what nearby places they could have eaten at.
Oh, like, that, I feel like that's, like, the worst, like, thought ever. It's like if you have serial killers, like, near your immediate area, it's kind of like, I wonder where you went.
A serial killer because she just killed her parents. So,
I feel like
isn't good. I'm not advocating it. I'm just saying it's not serial killing.
But I feel like that's kind of serial killer. Because, like, I mean, like, it was two. Yeah, I feel like if it's more than one,
serial killer needs a cool down period.
That's true. That is very true. Yeah.
Yeah, which is how we have the guy from NGCU.
I feel like that should be in the next one.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, no, next one we're doing...
The future second part serial killer.
Yeah, no, I actually drive by where he used to dump his bodies all the time.
That's comforting.
Oh, yeah.
Is it in the NJCU teacher parking lot?
No, it's actually a South Mountain station. Not South Mountain Park.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh. Ooh. Ooh.
So he dropped them off in South Orange.
I mean, at least he had a point of location.
It's a very pretty area.
It's a very pretty area. I like to go, like, I like to go to South Orange just to watch, like, some movies. Now I don't want to go. My next person is, I feel like you'd like this. Just because of the fact. Like, sometimes I pick out, like, some people that I feel like Geraldine would just like. Because I feel like they're just so interesting that I'm just like, oh, okay. But her name is Leonardo
Caraggio.
No.
No.
It was the, we're going to have a mnemonic device tell us what her last name is, too. So
we
that
had
was
one earlier.
Yeah, so that was Core Hero.
Chanchuli.
Leonardo Chanchuli. There you go.
Like patchouli.
Exactly. That's literally what she said to me too before, and I was just like, I won't remember that. So she was the soap maker of Carangelo.
Okay.
Or Carangio. I'm sorry.
Well, patchouli kind of works with it all.
I know, but that works in her name. That doesn't work in the place that she was the soap maker.
Yeah. No, but who cares?
Yeah. So, Leonarda, she murdered three women between 1939 and 1940, and she turned their bodies into soap and tea cakes.
See, it works with patchouli.
And I literally wrote down too. I'm like, making her the original Mrs. Lovett from Sweeney Todd.
If they were meat pies, definitely.
Yeah. But they were tea cakes. So I mean, like, baking.
Yeah. On a side note, they were doing Sweeney Todd on like 14th Street, and I really wanted to go, and they like served meat pies. Yeah, they actually served legit meat pies. That's before you got to see the play. And I was like, oh my god, I have to go see this. But, like, tickets were about $200. And
yeah, no.
Yeah. So, that was my reaction to it, too. Like, I want to go! Oh, it's $200.
Never mind!
Well, I would have bought them for myself. And then, like, had a lovely date by myself.
That's how I felt about, like, Book of Mormon. I'm like, maybe I'll buy these for myself and have, like, a date with myself. And then I'm just like, you are too much money. You could go fuck yourself. Then I went to go see, like, the original Book of Mormon with Andrew...
Lloyd Webber?
No.
I don't know.
No, it was Andrew... Reynolds, he's in Girls, and Josh Gad.
Okay.
And
yeah, they did a whole episode in, oh god, it was in...
Was it in South Park?
No.
Because that's where it originally came from.
But it was on Comedy Central.
Oh, okay.
So it might have been either, what's the guy that took over?
I have no idea. I don't remember anything past them two.
It was the guy that took over Jon Stewart.
Oh, Trevor Noah.
Yeah, I think they had a thing with him. Or it might have been Jon Stewart. I don't know.
If you guys ever get the chance to, like, go see Book of Mormon, I suggest you take that chance to go see it. I saw it, like, with preview tickets when it first came out. And it wasn't, like, all the rage, but it was super cool. And the music is just fantastic.
Yeah, my ex saw it.
So, Leonarda, in her early life, she was a troubled young girl. And she, like, committed suicide. She tried to commit suicide twice.
Yeah.
And she married a registry office clerk. And her parents didn't approve of their marriage. And because they wanted to marry her off to another dude. But after she was married to the registry office clerk, she claimed that her parents put a curse on her marriage. So that's the first step of the downfall of Leonardo. So the couple moved to the husband's hometown, and then
Leonardo was sentenced to fraud and imprisonment in 1927. They moved again, and she was released, and an earthquake fucked up their entire home, and they moved to... Hold on, wait a minute. We can do the auto. We're gonna do all the to this because the auto is just fucking great for this. Wait a minute.
Corragio.
Yeah! Corragio.
Corragio.
You.
That place.
So, when they moved there, she was super popular and respected in the neighborhood, and she opened up a small shop. And then at the same time, she had 17 pregnancies and lost...
Holy crap.
Yeah, and lost 3 children because of miscarriage, and then 10 died in their youth. And what? She was pretty fertile. Yeah.
So, hold on there for a second. How many miscarriages?
10. I mean, no. She lost 3 children during miscarriage, and then 10 died during their youth. So that's 13 kids.
That died.
Yeah.
And then how?
And she was really protective over her other 4 children.
So she had 4 in total out of like 17.
Yep. But get this. So, So since she was protective of her other children, a fortune teller told her that she would marry and have kids, but they'd all die super young.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, that came true. And then she went to another palm reader who said, "In your right hand, I see prison. In your left hand, I see criminal asylum." So she went to one fortune teller and basically told her, "Yo, most of your kids are gonna die. And then in your right, like, and in your like left hand, it's like, I see prison. Yeah, I see prison or like asylum for you. So I'm not really sure. You're a toss up right now." And
I mean, to her credit, in those times, you could be thrown in asylum for like anything. Like, you masturbate too much and.
Yeah, but
wake up. You know,
I know what the sound. It's like a DJ.
Maybe edit that one out.
I'm not gonna edit that out. So, let's talk about her murders. What? So, in 1939, her eldest son was going to war. Well, he was going to go to war in the Italian army for World War II. And it was
for Mussolini.
Yeah, so it was, like, upcoming. It wasn't, it wasn't there yet.
It was soon.
And he was going, but it wasn't, like,
it was
at their doorstep. Yeah. So, she thought that she would protect her child by doing human sacrifices.
So, who did she sacrifice?
Oh, wait, there's more. So, she found middle-aged women... and women who would visit her for help. And the first woman was named Faustina Setti. And she was a lifelong spinster who came to her in, like, a want for a husband. And she told her that she would find a suitable partner in Pola, which is, like, a Creotian or, like, Italian, like, offset.
Cretian?
Yeah, and she told
me sad.
Yeah,
and it's like, oh, you're a spinster. I have a husband for you. Hold on. Oh. Wait here while I like stab you in the back.
Oh wait, there's more. So she told the girl to write letters and postcards to her family and friends. That she was gonna go to Pola and find like this dude, and like when she settled in Pola, then Leonardo would, like, you know, send them out to her family and friends. And then Setti came to visit her one last time before she wanted her chip, and she offered her drugged wine and then killed her with an axe and put her body in a closet. She cut her into 9 pieces.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and in her memoir, yes, this woman wrote a memoir called The Embittered Soul's Confession. She says, "I threw the bodies into a pot added 7 kilos of cassic soda, which I have brought to make soap, and then stirred the mixture until the pieces dissolved into a thick, dark mush, and I poured into several buckets and emptied in a nearby septic tank. As for the blood in the basin, I waited until it was coagulated, dried it in the oven, grounded and mixed it with flour, sugar, chocolate, milk, and eggs, as well as a bit of margarine. Kneading all the ingredients together, I made lots of crunchy tea cakes and served them to the ladies who came to visit. Though Giuseppe and I ate them.
Holy crap!
She also then took Seti's life savings of 30,000
Libra.
I don't know.
Oh, lire, so I think it might have been, but.
I don't know how much that is.
Can I see the spelling?
L-I-R-E.
Lears.
I don't know how much that equals to. Lears,
I think. I might be completely wrong, and I'm sorry.
It's still money. And yeah. I don't know how much that equals to, but at the same exact time, you just killed it.
Here, and he would know.
Well, I'll send your, like, yeah, Gerald, you know, like, do the
no,
thing. You know what? Nobody's gonna.
No, if you're interested, we could possibly just have it, and it's not.
Yeah, just do.
Fuck it.
Do the thing. She also persuaded, like the first killing, she also persuaded her to write postcards and letters to her friends and family. And when she visited Leonardo for the last time, she also murdered her with an axe, and she obtained 3,000 of her money.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And then
she's like Lizzie Borden.
But wait,
there's more.
So
I love it when you say that. It makes you think of Billy Mays.
So, the last victim was Virginia. Hold on.
Something or other.
Yeah, we're gonna use Google Translate to do this one. Okay.
Cachopo.
Yay! So, Virginia Cachopo.
Oh, I like that name.
Leonardo.
Better than Cavallaro.
I know. Oh, well, that's easy to say. But Leonardo claimed that she found her work as a secretary in a mysterious place in Florence. So the thing was is that she died the same way as the other two victims, with an axe and stuff like that. But
so was it like to the back of the head or in the back of the back?
I have no idea. They were just killed with an axe.
With an axe. Can I ask you what year this was? This was before World War II, right?
This was like, yeah. Yeah. So it was like
kind of like with mine, they were like, oh, it's in the 1700s. Who gives a shit? Like,
but this was the difference between Virginia's body and everybody else's body. Virginia's body was melted to make soap. Yeah.
So they were like, oh, this legitimately happened.
Yeah, so
she was melted to make soap. Legit Fight Club style. Technic, we're looking at you.
So the thing with her body was, this is the official statement, she ended up in a pot like the other two. Her flesh was fat and white. When it had melted, I added a bottle of cologne, there we go. And after a long time of on the boil, I was able to make some acceptable creamy soap. I gave bars to neighbors and acquaintances. The cakes, too, were better. That woman was really sweet.
I hope I'm sweet when I get murdered and made into soap and, like, meat cakes.
She took 50,000 of her money.
Oh my god.
Of the LR.
The Libras.
Yeah.
And Libras. There aren't Libras. Libras. I'm sorry. That sounds very bad.
And she took her assorted jewels.
Yeah.
So, like, this woman was like, fucking foul. Yeah. And Virginia's sister was super suspicious of her disappearance. And, like, she knew that the last place she was with, like, well, the last person she was seen with was Leonardo. And she reported her fear and suspicion to the superintendent of police. And they opened an investigation and then arrested her. And then she immediately confessed to the crime. But.
I like big butts and I cannot lie.
When she was tried for the murder of the, like, she was tried for murder in Ruggiero Emilia, which was, like, the place.
Yeah.
And then, like, that was in 1946. And she remained unrepentant. So she, like, was, she felt. She
never felt bad about it. She was just like, fuck this. Yeah, fuck that. Like, I never did anything wrong.
Yeah. So
come at me, bro.
She basically was just like, I really don't care. And in, like, her, like, the official account was at her trial in Reggio Emilia last week, Leonardo gripped the witness stand rail with oddly delicate hands and calmly set the prosecutor right on certain details. Her deep-set dark eyes gleamed with a wild inner pride as she concluded, I gave the copper ladly, which I used to skim the fat off the kettles, to my country, which was so badly in need of metal during the last days of the war. And I'm like, this was to fucking protect your son.
Yeah.
Like, all of this was just, like, basically to protect your son. So it's kind of like, where did you really stand on this?
Yeah, like, there's a lot of weird shit.
Yeah, so she was, so after, like, all of this stuff, she was found guilty of her crimes, and she was sentenced to 30 years in prison.
Prison, yeah.
And 3 years in criminal asylum. So, the right hand was prison, left hand was criminal asylum. See? Like, she actually got both of them, and she kind of, that kind of did it. But she died in 1970 when she was in criminal asylum of cerebral palsy. Yes.
Cerebral palsy.
Yeah.
And, no, that's brutal.
And, I
mean, geez.
Yeah. And a number of artifacts from the case, including a pot in which the victims were boiled, are on display in the Criminology Museum in Rome.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Huh. And
There's actually a criminology museum in D.C. too.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
And the only reason I know this is because I'm going to D.C. this weekend.
Yeah. So the next episode, which I don't think we can, we don't have to keep this one secret. The next episode we're going to keep secret. But this, the next episode, Geraldine and her boyfriend, John, who we are recording in his apartment, are going to D.C. And she is going to bring us back some awesome stories about things from D.C. And I'm going to stay at home and look at some stuff from D.C.
Yeah, so we're going to do crazy stories that have to do with the capital of the United States. And that should be fun. I mean, even if it's about objects in the Smithsonian, I think it could be interesting.
Yeah. I really want to go to the Smithsonian one day.
Oh, we should do a trip together. Like, even if it's during the day.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, did I tell you about the time that I went overnight for the rally that Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert had?
No.
So, I was friends with this girl that I'm no longer friends with, and also, this guy that I briefly dated.
Friendships dissolve. Relationships fade. It's a circle of life, guys. Mm-hmm. Deal with it.
Everything ends. Anyways, so we went to D.C. and we took those, like, $15 bus rides. Don't do it. It's goddamn awful. Unless you want to take a bus ride for, like, 4 hours that smells like piss and has, like, roosters croaking at you. Then go ahead. Do it. But other than that, you know, that's
the experience. Don't do it, guys. Just don't do it. I used to take those kind of buses to New York.
It was Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we took a Chinatown bus for that rally, and I mean, at the time, it was fun. Yeah, kinda. It was like a Halloween thing, so I was dressed up too. So, yeah. I forgot where I was going with the story.
It was just a DC story.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was an experience at the time, but legit, don't do it. It was just
goddamn awful. The life lesson of this entire thing is just don't fucking do it.
I mean, if you're going to do a trip, plan out a trip for the weekend and take, the megabus for more than $15.
Or, you know, don't take the mega bus because, like, those explode, apparently.
Oh, they do?
Did you ever see that? There's this progression of a tweet that this guy had, and, like, it was a mega bus, and it just exploded by the end of it. And on the side of a road, it was
great. No, I never saw that.
I'm going to send that to Geraldine. You guys look at it on your own.
Maybe take a Greyhound. They might be safer.
Yeah, I took a Greyhound twice. To Indiana and to Michigan.
I took a Greyhound to DC. It was fine.
Yeah, like, Greyhounds are fun. You guys take Greyhounds.
Or roosters. Or anything like that.
What the fuck are we even talking about?
Because the $15 bus ride from D.C., from Chinatown to Chinatown, from New York City to D.C., like, legit smelled like peacock and chicken piss.
How about if you're in New York, just take the subway?
Well, you can't take a subway to D.C.
I mean, you could take a subway to Chinatown to Chinatown. I mean, that's just one.
I mean, if you take the subway to Chinatown to Chinatown, you're taking it to within the same city.
Let them have this, Geraldine.
It's not gonna happen.
Let them have this.
I mean, you could do Amtrak.
What the fuck?
Amtrak is kind of like...
I kind of want to take Amtrak to Massachusetts. That's expensive?
It is expensive.
But I would rather do that than take a bus.
Oh, trust me, it's better.
Yeah. So...
You will not have roosters peeing and shitting on your face.
I'm gonna cut this episode of the peeing and shitting roosters. So, until next week,
see you. Have fun. Peace. Well, this was Weird Word and Wayward. Peace out.
Weird Word and Wayward?
Yeah, no.
See you guys next time.